All right, welcome back to the Honors Element. I'm Ben Lear here, joined by Morgan Vincent. Today we're switching gears a bit. Last few episodes were all about macroscopic stuff, equilibrium, phase transitions, even vapor pressure. But now let's shrink our focus right down and start exploring the nature of light itself. So Morgan, when we say light, what are we actually talking about?
Yeah, that's a good starting point. I mean, in our everyday language, we just say light. But scientifically, we call it electromagnetic radiation. That's the umbrella term for all those waves zipping around, whether they are visible and invisible.
Right. And light really is a wave, at least in some ways. There's a frequency, essentially how many cycles pass a fixed point in 1 second, and a wavelength, which is the distance from a particular spot on a peak to that identical spot on the next peak. Frequency is measured in hertz, which is 1/seconds, and we use the Greek letter nu, that looks like a V. And then we've got wavelength, lambda, your classic upside down Y shape. So depending on which of those goes up, the other goes down, as long as the speed is constant.
Exactly. The speed of light in a vacuum, or even air, is basically 3.0 times 10 to the 8th meters per second. So when you multiply the wavelength by the frequency, it always equals C, the speed of light. That's a relationship you're going to hear a lot about in chemistry.
And once you start talking about waves, it's natural to wonder, what kind of waves are we even talking about? Because light is really just one small slice of a much bigger picture, the electromagnetic spectrum.
Yeah, people usually think of light as just the colors they see. But if you look at the bigger picture, the electromagnetic spectrum, visible light is just one really narrow band in this huge range. The whole spectrum runs from super long radio waves, past microwaves and infrared, then the visible part, and then onto ultraviolet, X-rays, and gamma rays on the short end.
Longer wavelengths, like radio waves, have low frequency and low energy. It's funny because every day we're using or interacting with the spectrum and probably not thinking much about it. Take your phone, for example. The FM radio might be tuned to 90.5 megahertz. That's 90.5 million waves per second. And those radio waves have wavelengths that are a few meters long. Same for Wi-Fi, TV. All of that uses specific slices of the spectrum just with different frequencies and wavelengths.
And then you go shorter, microwaves, like we mentioned, bounce around inside your oven at around 2.45 gigahertz. Infrared is just below visible, and it's what you feel as warmth from sunlight or a campfire. Then the visible slice, that tiny part from about 400 to 700 nanometers in wavelength, that's what our eyes actually detect.
I always think it's wild how much is out there that we can't see. Like, ultraviolet is just above what our eyes register. It's what causes sunburns, but insects can actually see some UV. X-rays are even higher energy, great for imaging bones, less great for hanging around in, you know, wear that lead vest. And then gamma rays up at the very edge, super short wavelength, super high energy, usually from nuclear processes or cosmic events.
Now, the connection between energy and frequency becomes a big deal once we start talking about how atoms absorb or emit light. That's where chemistry really comes in. But before we get there, there's this one experiment that really nailed down the idea that light behaves as a wave.
Yes, the double slit experiment. It's one of those demonstrations that completely changes how you think about light. You take a beam of light and pass it through two narrow slits, and instead of getting two bright spots on a screen, you get this pattern of bright and dark bands.
Those bands come from interference, where the waves line up and reinforce each other in some places. That's constructive interference, and cancel each other out in others, which is destructive interference. It's kind of mind-blowing when you first see it, because it's proof that light isn't just shooting straight through like particles. It's interacting with itself like a wave.
Yeah, and it's a great reminder that what seems simple, like flipping on a light switch, actually hides an incredible amount of complexity.
And this experiment sets the stage for where we're heading next, thinking about light not only as a wave, but also as something that can act like a particle. That's where things start to get really interesting, and it's where chemistry meets quantum mechanics.
Now let's tackle the really strange part. For centuries, people thought of light as just a wave, like we've been discussing. But then some experiments just didn't fit. Enter Planck, Einstein, and the idea that light comes in these little packets of energy called photons.
Yeah, and here's where that wave idea just breaks down. Classically, energy should be able to take any value. But, in practice, some super basic experiments proved that wasn't true at all. I think the turning point was blackbody radiation. If you try to model the energy emitted by a hot object using only wave ideas, you get this thing called the ultraviolet catastrophe. It predicts objects should emit infinite energy at short wavelengths, which obviously doesn't happen.
Planck figured out that light energy comes in lumps. Each lump or photon has an energy proportional to its frequency. Energy equals Planck's constant times frequency. Planck's constant is represented by an H, and it's tiny, 6.6 on 26 times 10 to the negative 34 joule seconds. It is important to note that this is not joules per second, but joules times seconds. But this number is very small, and that explains why we don't notice quantization at the big human scale. But at the atomic level, it's everything.
And there's another classic, the photoelectric effect. Shine light onto a metal and electrons just pop off, but only if the frequency is high enough, no matter how bright the light. That only makes sense if light's energy is bundled up in photons. Below a certain frequency, no electrons, no matter what. Go above it, the electrons start flying.
You see this again in atomic spectra. If electrons could absorb any old value of energy, we'd get rainbows. But we don't. We see sharp lines. That's again evidence that the atom only exchanges energy in quantized amounts. The hydrogen atom, for example, only emits or absorbs certain colors, which means it's jumping between discrete energy levels.
That quantization idea was the start of quantum theory, which we'll be diving deeper into in coming weeks. It's what lets us use photons to probe atoms and explains, honestly, why we're even here talking about chemistry and not just, I don't know, a soup of particles doing whatever they want.
So, that's the wild thing about light. Sometimes you have to treat it as a wave, sometimes as a particle. And it's this dual nature that opens the door to quantum chemistry, atomic structure, and the behavior of matter itself.
All right, I think that's a good place to pause for now. Next episode, we'll see how this quantum perspective gets us to actual models of the atom, electron configurations, and all the stuff students love to memorize. Ben, always fun talking chemistry, physics, and philosophy with you.
Likewise, Morgan. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on the Honors Element. We'll catch you next time.
Take care, everyone.